Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and welcome to Ask Ken, a feature of the System Club, normally for System Club members only, but today we are opening it up to everyone. We've posted two things about the current situation on my blog. One is called Leadership in a Time of Crisis, and that was posted on March 17th, and the other one was posted several days before that, called Coronavirus Stock Market Meltdown NU. And what is Ask Ken? Every week I take questions from my System Club members and I answer them in this recording, and we put it out weekly. And obviously a lot of questions about where we're at and what's going on, what to do, and so on. As a preamble, I want to say that probably the vast majority of people listening to this, I know this is true for my System Club members, are actually on dry land right now. I mean, we have always taught to work at home. We've always taught to work with a virtual staff. We've always taught to have as many digital automatic type of products you can possibly have, and using those as your primary income source. So people that have followed that advice, which we've been giving now for 25 years, are probably in pretty good shape. And that's a good thing. Several years ago, after the 2008 financial crisis, I put out something called the Financial Independence Day Blueprint. I know my System Club members have that. It's on the System Club site. I know a lot of people have bought it and read it over the years. It's probably a good idea to dust that thing off and read it. Anybody that read that thing and followed the advice in it is in very good financial shape right now. All right, so what if you're not in good shape right now? First, my sympathies. Second, I've seen a lot of this kind of thing before, and that's why we recorded a call with one of our New Orleans System Club members. So if you didn't hear that call, it's well worth your time. We have to have some perspective. I've, for whatever reason, have been attracted to catastrophe. After 9/11, I was extremely active down in New York City. After New Orleans, I was extremely active in New Orleans. We had a big flood up here several years back in the Catskills that wiped a lot of people out. I was extremely active in that. And then we had a big flood down in New York City, Brooklyn, and Staten Island in particular, Hurricane Sandy, and I was very active in that. So I've seen a lot of people get completely wiped out. So it's not a new thing to me to see this, all right? Maybe you've never seen such a thing. Maybe you've never seen an entire city underwater for weeks on end, and every single business and every single public service and every single useful thing that people need gone and wiped away. This is not good. However, the lights are still on. There's food in the stores. Nobody's bombing us. Nobody's shooting at us. So, you know, it could be a lot worse. And I can tell you from experience that people bounce back. They come, let's be honest here. You don't bounce back. You crawl back. It's a long, arduous process. But it can be done, and it's been done by thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And sometimes you can come back way stronger than where you were before. New Orleans is kind of an example of that, and it took a long time. The flood was in 2005, and as late as 2010, I was like, I don't know if this city's ever going to really come back. And, you know, it's booming, or was booming, up until the closure of every single business in the city. But it did come back. It took time. And a lot of things came back stronger than ever. So try to keep that in mind if you're one of the people that's being hit hard by this. The other thing, and I'm sure a lot of people, this is not their first rodeo, but for some younger people, it might be, right? Or for some really lucky people, it might be. But what I have learned, having gone through several episodes of more than trivial hardship, is the glorious value of self-discipline. And I don't want to be lecturing here, but I guess when times are good, you can be really loose. And when times are bad, nothing will, you have no better friend on earth when times are bad than self-discipline. What am I talking about? And again, this is going to sound like, grandma's advice, but regularity of schedule really, really, really helps. Some of the stuff I'm going to talk about right now might seem crazy, but trust me, it works. Benjamin Franklin said, "Early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise." Why did he say that? There's so many things here. One of the things is we need at this time maximum physical strength, maximum physical energy, and maximum stability, physical and mental stability. So we want to give ourselves every possible edge in that. So one of the things is simply pacing yourself. You're going to feel like you need to do 10,000 things at once, and you know what? You do. But there's a limit to how many 16-hour days you can put in. Ask me how I know. You just have to pace yourself. A general good rule of thumb, it's an ancient Chinese method. Don't spend tomorrow's energy today. Right? Be as efficient as you can, be as effective as you can, get as much done as you can, but don't start dipping into tomorrow's energy today. This is going to be a long, the reason is this is going to be a long thing. This is not like a house on fire where you have to just do whatever. It is going to be a long, long, long process. And so we've got to pace ourselves. Right, I'm going to get into some biology here. System Club members know that I've been obsessed with studying health and biology, and that I have made the claim that I have the equivalent now of a medical school education based on self-education. Maybe I'm delusional, but I've helped a lot of people out of a lot of health problems in the last several years, unofficially, where doctors had no clue. And we're going to talk about doctors and the medical system in a bit because this is something we got to address. But first, let me get to the basics. This is going to sound really simple, but try not to eat late at night. I know this is like, what? Are you crazy? It is one of the best things you can do for yourself to be finished your evening meal around 6 o'clock. Earlier is even better. You got to press it to 7, okay. Why is this so important? All right, you've got a thing called a liver. Your liver is responsible for many, 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 many essential processes in your body. Only one of them is helping with digestion, but it does a lot of other things. One of the things it does is it constantly repairs and cleans itself. If you eat at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock or midnight, you have now given, instead of your liver repairing itself while it's sleeping and doing all these other housekeeping things it needs to done be, to, do, it is now being engaged in the process of digesting. So just like you can't do 100 things at once, your liver can't do 100 things at once. And digestion and dealing with food kind of trumps everything else. So if you want to have much better immune system, much better health, end your meals early in the evening so that you have a long period where that liver can absolutely relax. Another reason for getting your last meal in early is, believe it or not, it helps to go to bed early and get up early. Now, this night, you know, I'm a night owl, I'm a mom. No, you're not. You're a person who is abusing your body. Okay, let's just, I'm saying this because I was that guy. I was that guy that worked till 3 in the morning and thought I was super productive and thought everything was cool and thought I was a night owl and blah, 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 blah. We're not night owls. Okay. Electricity, electric light has existed for 150 years. That's it. Previous to that, every biological function on this planet for every single creature was regulated by sunlight. Okay? If you think 150 years erases, I don't know how old you think the world is, but let's say life has been on the planet for 1 billion years. If you think 150 years erases the impact of 1 billion or 5 billion or whatever years of evolution, you're delusional. Okay? And I was delusional. One of the best things you can do is when that sun starts going down, you start winding down. This is not the time to start a Netflix blitz where you're watching, you know, one show after another late into the night. It's not a time to take on a big computer project. It's a time to start winding down. And the sooner you can get to bed after the sun goes down, the healthier you're going to be. Ben Franklin actually knew what he was talking about. Why do we know this is true? Because we know beyond any shadow of a doubt that people that work the night shift are statistically sicker than people that work during the day. Cancer, diabetes, you name it. So if those big diseases are showing up from the night shift, you better believe a lot of minor things like reduced immune system is going to come up too. So we function best when we get sunlight, actual God-given sunlight on our skin as early as we possibly can. Windows are great, but it's not as powerful and as helpful to us as sunlight. So get your last meal in early, get to bed early-ish. Don't start create. Reading is a good thing, right? Reading will calm you down. Netflix, not a good thing. Complicated computer stuff, not a good thing. And I'm typing right now while I'm talking because my computer is malfunctioning. Okay, hopefully it's still working. All right. When you go to bed early, that means you can get up with the sun or close to the sun. All right, sunrise is early, let's face it. But it's a great thing. As soon as you get out of bed, get out there and get the sun on your skin. That is a multi-billion year process. Your body goes, oh, I get it. I'm supposed to be awake. So I'm going to turn on all the awake daytime functions right now. It seems simple. It is incredibly important and incredibly easy to do. If you can, get walking first thing in the morning. If you're home with your family, get on that walk together. Why? This is a message to your body. Hey, these people are in the game. They're like doing stuff. Let's marshal our resources to help. A lot of people are drinking more than normal. Don't recommend it. I absolutely don't recommend that. All right, so those are some very, very simple things that you can do to strengthen your immune system. And we need it. We need it. It's again, this is going to be a long thing, not a short thing. And everything that I'm saying is backed up 10,000 ways by science and experience. And simple, but you know, we don't really talk about simple things anymore, and we probably are going to need to talk about a lot of simple things. Next thing, if you are on dry land, on solid ground, and you're not one of the people being whacked by this, look around and see how you can help. Many of you I know are already doing this. It's not always obvious what the best thing to do is. It may take time to figure it out, but it's good to start with that intention. So if things will, you know, it's a creative mind. If you put the intention in there, you'll come up with creative answers. Somehow I've made a lot of money over the years, and somehow I've held on to it. And, you know, if I had to describe every single thing I did to do that, I'm not sure I could. But I can tell you this, one of the things that never hurt was in times of emergency, I had never hesitated to stop everything I was doing and help out. And that included devoting significant amounts of time, significant amounts of money. I'm not going to say the universe is going to reward you. I don't know how that works. I'm going to say it won't hurt. And I'm going to say that at some deep biological level, your body, your soul, your mind, your spirit, whatever, is going to say, wow, let's pull on some extraordinary resources for this guy or gal because they're helping. It never hurt me. It never hurt me. And I just think it's part of being an entrepreneur. We are problem solvers. We are value creators. We are life improvers. We are the people who get things done. And as you're probably observing, there's a lot of people around that are incapable of getting productive things done in normal times. And I'm going to tell you, and you know right now, because you're probably dealing with them, they don't get any better in times of crisis. So it's really up to us to draw on all these things that we've learned from building our businesses and figure out, you know, what we can do. Some guidelines that I follow, I do not give money to big organizations, and I'm going to single out the Red Cross. I've seen how the Red Cross dealt in 9/11. I saw how the Red Cross dealt in New Orleans. I saw how the Red Cross dealt with Hurricane Sandy in New York City. Money wasted, money down the drain given to them. They're the easy one, and I know you're not supposed to say anything bad about the Red Cross, but we got to get real, you know. Now, luckily, I don't see them out there, you know, begging for money and sucking up all the money out of society and then squandering it, which is what they did in those three past catastrophes. So I don't see them doing that, thank goodness. But if you're inclined to just reflexively give money to organizations like that, I'm just going to say I won't do it. And I wouldn't recommend anybody else do it. The best way to help is to keep your eyes open, read the paper, look at local blogs. Invariably, there are average, normal, regular, community-minded people that step up and do miraculous things. They are 10,000 times more useful than any government official. They're probably not getting any government help. They might even be getting government interference. And I know that sounds crazy, and I could tell you stories. But those folks are out there. And if you have money to give, they're the people to give it to. If you have time and effort to give, they're the people to give it to. It's a little hard in the middle of an emergency to build a community network if you don't already have one. But there are people that have already done that over the years. So there's people that are out there. You can find them, and they're the best people to help. And you probably have, you know, practical experience and insight that you're sure will make things a lot better locally. What you're going to find out is you have to fit yourself into the social matrix as it is. People may not have any clue about how capable and competent you are and the validity of the things that you want to do or you want them to do. You're just going to have to deal with it. And, you know, one thing that I'm sure some people are facing is disappointment in employees, family members who are, some may be exhibiting a what I call bizarre passivity in this. In other words, they're, other than moaning and groaning, they're not going to change a thing. They're not going to raise the level of their game. If their work was sort of half-assed before, it's still going to be half-assed. If they're the kind of people that bring you problems instead of solving problems, they're still going to be those people. You can use this as a teaching moment. I'm telling people that I work with, don't be a problem reporter, be a problem solver. I'm also telling people who moan and groan about how complicated or difficult something is I explain to them why it's important, how to do it, and then I tell them, get it done. You know, I leave it at that. It's probably one of the most frustrating things about these kind of situations. And try not to let it get to you. You know, you just gotta suck it up and deal with what you got. Okay, so that's that. If you can help your customers, and one of the things I didn't talk about at the head of this, the beginning, is, you know, all over the years we've talked about work at home with super low overhead. We've talked about take advantage of virtual teams, virtual employees, virtual vendors. And we've also talked about treating your customers right. If you've done that, and we know there's a whole bunch of people in the internet guru world that do not do that, if you've been, a sort of rape and pillage guy, you have no credibility with your customers, and they're not going to have a whole lot of patience with you right now, because, you know, one of the positive things about a catastrophe is it's very clarifying. It's a time of clarity. People start to throw out the unessential and start to pay attention to the essential. So if you have been taking good care of your customers and you're having a problem now, you can level with them and they will understand because you have a relationship with them. They know that you're on their side. They've seen it over the years. It's not something you have to convince them of now. I mean, I don't know about you, but all these, you know, corporate statements about we're with you now, we're, come on, man. This is just corporate PR, you know? So hopefully you've treated your customers right. And now is a great time to think about how you can help them. I just saw a great thing. I'm going to give credit where credit is due. I've got to look it up on the computer here. Nope, can't find it. See if I can find it. Nope, can't. What a shame. Okay, anyway, it's a great guy out of Australia, and of course I'm drawing a blank on his name. He's got a really, really good advisory company to people who are agencies. And you probably already know who I'm talking about. We've certainly interviewed him on the System Club. And he's across the board reducing prices for everybody. That's possibly something that you can do. Because remember, this will end someday. This will be over someday. And people will remember who stepped up and helped them and who did not. So that's something you can do. All right. The other day I recorded a pretty long piece about the coronavirus itself. And I'm going to do, for my System Club members, I'm going to do a summary here. It may not be a shock to you that the news media has been completely inaccurate. They have generated mass hysteria. They have failed to share even the most basic useful information. And that our politicians have followed suit. And our medical industrial complex has followed suit as well. And I'm going to give you just a short sketch of this. The World Health Organization went to China and did a very in-depth study of this pandemic. And they came up with a lot of very useful information, which you're not getting. The report exists. If somebody had told you about it, you could read it, but nobody's telling us about it. Instead, we're getting bureaucratic public health people who, by the way, completely screwed this up, but now they're experts in why we should panic. And, you know, we're marketers. We know that fear is a great seller. And believe me, there are a lot of people who are in the terror business. They're going to terrorize you into you doing what they want you to do. And that's what we're seeing on television. I can prove it. I'm going to prove it to you in a second. But anyway, this World Health Organization report has some really important information in it. Okay? Number one, this is not a community spread disease. Okay, you hear all that community spread, everyone's got to lock themselves in their house, nobody can go out, nobody can talk to anybody, every single store has to close down. Okay, that's not what they found in China, where they've actually dealt with this successfully. This is transmitted in the following way. A sick person with symptoms comes into close contact in a closed space with a bunch of people over a prolonged period of time. That's what the World Health Organization found out. That's what the Chinese found out. The report exists. And you're not being told that. So let's break this down. How you get sick, how one gets sick from this. Number one, go out and find somebody with symptoms. Okay? Because it's been determined from the study that asymptomatic people, contrary to the hysteria of the news media in the United States, do not transmit the disease. There is no such thing as a healthy carrier. Okay? We've all been told about these carriers and we have to avoid them and we can't be a carrier. No, that's not true. So for someone to get this disease, you have to find somebody with symptoms. You have to get and stay in close proximity with that person for a long period of time. And you have to do that in a closed space, like an office or a hospital. That's how the disease transmits. It does not transmit. You don't walk past somebody on the street and they give it to you. Now, there was some nonsense about the virus hanging in the air. And that came from a scientific but non-medical study in which they, and I kid you not, they took the virus, they put it in an aerosol, and they sprayed it all over the place in this room, and they measured how long it lasted. Okay? And it lasted a fairly long amount of time. But guess what? Nobody is putting, as far as I know, this virus in an aerosol can and spraying it in your house. That's not happening. So it only can be transmitted by droplets. So somebody coughing on you, somebody sneezing on you, somebody putting that on a surface that you then touch. That's how it gets transmitted. It doesn't get transmitted magically. What are symptoms of this disease? Fever, cough, weakness. Okay. Fever's easy. We have thermometers. If somebody's got a fever right now, you know what? Put them in their own room, take care of them, stay away from them for a while. And if you've got a fever, same thing. If you're coughing and a fever, stay away. It may not be this, by the way. Somewhere I saw that of the people with symptoms who were tested, only 5% actually have this particular disease. Okay, wrap your mind around that. So there's a lot of diseases floating around. It's not just this one. But a good rule of thumb always is if you're sick, isolate yourself and don't give it to the rest of your family or the rest of the team. But it's hard to get this thing. And now that there's now numbers out of Oxford University, someone who studies epidemics for a living, who says it looks like 0.1% of the people that get this get sick enough to go to the hospital. So a lot of people are going to get this and it's just going to wash right over them. That's another issue. But what they found in China is the reason China has such a bad problem and the reason Northern Italy had such a bad problem and Iran and now New York City is now China had an excuse because they didn't know what this thing was. They, by the way, they know how to treat it and they know how to stop the transmission of it. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. What China discovered is this thing is transmitted rapidly in two places, hospitals and homes. So Chinese people tend to live multi-generationally. So if one person is sick and they don't isolate themselves, and it's kind of hard because not everybody's got a big house. If one person has it, the whole family's going to have it. That's why they were taking people and putting them in facilities where they could not contaminate and infect the rest of the people in their lives. That was a good thing. That was a smart move. Chinese doctors initially did not understand the level of care and precaution they had to take to keep from catching the virus themselves and spreading it to new patients. Most of the cases in China came from hospital transmission and or family transmission. When I say most, I'm talking like 95-99%. Okay. For some reason, that important lesson has not been transmitted. It wasn't transmitted to Italy. Italy's a rich, you know, Northern Italy's a rich place. They have good hospitals, good doctors. For whatever reason, they didn't compare notes with what the Chinese learned. And they went in there without taking proper precautions. And they caught the disease and spread it throughout the hospital. That's where the cases are coming from. They're coming from the hospitals. They're not going to the hospital. They're not showing up at the hospital doors. They're in the hospitals. And this is a problem with hospitals in general that preceded the problem of this virus. 100,000 plus people a year die from infections they get while in the hospital. They go to the hospital, they get an infection, they die from that infection. That happens 100,000 times a year. So, should we be shutting down every business in America, which was what we're doing right now? I don't see it. Other thing, you know, cleaning surfaces, great idea. Why not? Washing hands regularly with soap, by the way, do the research. Soap trumps everything, beats all other substances you can wash your hands with. Wash your hands. But the problem, the real problem that's going on is our medical industrial complex is not rising to the occasion. And I have some really alarming, real evidence of that. Everybody's heard of John Hopkins, I assume, one of the great medical schools in America. We have the greatest medical system in the world. We really don't. I mean, I've been around the world. You can get if you have a little bit of money and go to one of the better hospitals, you can get better medical treatment in Guatemala than you can get in Manhattan. Ask me how I know. Okay, so we don't have the best medical system in the world. That is bullshit. What we do have is the most expensive medical system in the world. That's a fact. We also have a medical system that is financially driven to an extreme degree. And there are gatekeepers, and you can look into this, whose whole job, they're called hospital administrators, not just them, there's a whole industry of people whose sole job is to be the financial gatekeeper for the medical industrial complex. If something works and helps people and reduces disease and is cheap, it will not find its place into the U.S. medical industrial complex. That is not a conspiracy theory. I can show you case after case after case after case after case. It's just the way it is. It is a 100% money-driven machine. And money is the number one objective. Everything else is secondary. That's why my System Club members know that I've been railing about this for years. And, you know, this is not a new thought. So what does this mean in practice? Well, what I've been telling my club members, in addition to business advice, is if you have a medical problem, you need to personally become the expert on that medical problem. You know, the same way you researched business and how to make money, because nobody was going to hand it to you, and because everybody spouting advice really didn't know what they were talking about, the same thing is true in medicine, especially U.S. medicine. You're going to get the standard of care, which sounds lovely. The standard of care is the thing that's been optimized for the maximum cash extraction from the population. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. They don't really care as long as the money keeps flowing. I know that's not a pleasant thing to contemplate, but we are adults and it's time that we grew up on certain subjects. And this is one of them. If you have a medical problem, or a family member, someone that you care about, it behooves you to become the expert on it and not leave it up to the mafia to solve it for you. You might get lucky and they might actually help you, but you better know what they're doing. You better understand it every step of the way. And yeah, it's hard. They're not going to make it easy for you. But did anybody make starting a business easy for you? I don't think so. All right. So here's some evidence of how bad things are. This, and I'm not talking about the situation we're in, I'm talking about the system that we're counting on to help us, the medical industrial complex. This virus has been around since November. Okay, nobody really understood it. December, people started to get a clue. January, it was dead obvious. This thing's bad, and it seems to travel. Now, we've since learned that it travels because of inadequate protections taken by hospitals. But still, anybody in the medical profession, anybody who is a professor of epidemiology, because you get paid to do that, right? That's a 40-hour-a-week job. That's all you do, right? So in January, you might have taken the donut out of your mouth and done a little bit of research, right? We have a thing called the CDC. They chew through billions of dollars every year. Maybe somebody back in January or February or early March could have taken the donut out of their mouth and picked up the phone, did a little research. Okay, I have an article right here published by a medical industry journal. Came out just yesterday. And it said last week, so I'm recording this on March 25th, last week, which was St. Patrick's Week, Johns Hopkins University, the medical school there, and all the epidemiology experts there, decided, hey, you know what? Why don't we get on the phone and talk with some Chinese doctors? Because, one, the CDC hasn't told us what to do, and they haven't. The article is really clear. We've received nothing. No training, no advice, no guidelines, no nothing. It's late March. Johns Hopkins didn't have a clue as of last week. So somebody, thank God, got a clue and said, do we have any Chinese guys around here? Oh, there's one. Hey, you got any friends in China that are doctors? The guy said, yeah, plenty of them. Can we talk to them? Sure. So last week, Johns Hopkins, and I'm not saying like this could have been Harvard, this could have been Penn, this could have been UCLA, it's all of them. They've been sitting on their hands waiting for the CDC to tell them what to do. I call it bizarre passivity. We all, as entrepreneurs, we see it every day of the week, and it just boggles our minds. Like, why aren't you doing something about this problem? Whether it's, you know, an employee in our business or a vendor who's screwing up, or a colleague that's, you know, not rising the occasion. We're just amazed. Well, we got to face the fact that the people who we are counting on are clueless. And I wrote about this, already several weeks ago, but now it's just becoming really apparent. So they got on the phone with the Chinese guys, and the Chinese guys, said, well, yeah, we went down, we were from a hospital 500 miles away from Wuhan, and we went down in February, and we had 78 intensive care unit cases, the worst of the worst, and we cured about 80% of them. And here's how we did it. And the John Hopkins people in late March last week are going, wow, that's fascinating. Good to know. New York is on fire with this thing because apparently nobody in New York City thought to pick up the phone and talk to the doctors in China who've actually been treating this thing now for 3-4 months. There's a lesson here. Don't be those people. Don't be those don't be like those doctors. The same thing happened in Italy, by the way. They didn't take advantage of what the Chinese people had already learned. The second thing they learned from their Chinese counterparts is you better have really good self-protective gear while you're treating these patients, because we didn't when we started, and that's why it spread so fast. So again, it's late March, and one of the premier medical schools in America, which has a whole epidemiology department, and knew this problem was coming, is only just learning the gear they need and how they need to use it. They also learned protocols for how to separate patients. You know, you need to have dedicated facilities just for people with this disease. People with mild symptoms, don't bring them to the hospital. I mean, get them checked out, but then send them home, have them self-isolate until they recover from it. So there's a whole protocol that the Chinese figured out. So just have to report this to you. You have to know this. You have to know that all the hysteria and all the running around and all the shutting down of businesses and all the making people fearful has been basically a scam. You know, we're told you can't go out because you might be an asymptomatic carrier. Meanwhile, hospitals, which should know better, haven't even bothered to do the most basic things. How can they say they don't have enough masks in a hospital? How can they say they don't have enough protective gear in a hospital when the Chinese have it? What's going on? You know, now they're talking about they need ventilators. Well, if you give the disease to many, many, many more people than should have ever gotten it because you didn't take precautions to have it not spread within your hospital, yeah, you're probably going to need a lot of ventilators. And this is tragic, too. I mean, there's no question. The other thing that the Chinese have found out and the Italians have confirmed is this is hitting people that have already an underlying disease. And we're being terrorized again by the news media. You probably saw the story about the family in New Jersey, and they had a party, and now 4 of them are dead. And oh my God, you know, and then none of them were at risk. I'm sorry. I saw the photograph of that family, and if you're interested in this subject, I suggest you search it out. New Jersey family coronavirus. The picture will come up. Look at those folks. They're lovely people, I'm sure. We're not talking about carrying a few extra pounds. We're talking about people who are obviously, visibly, morbidly obese. And that is a health issue. Some of them may have already had diabetes. So people with diabetes, people with pre-existing lung conditions, people with cancer, people with knockdown immune systems, people who are significantly morbidly obese, people who smoke, people who drink a lot. take a lot of drugs. By the way, opioid use, I don't know why this is not being talked about. This is a predictor of getting hit hard by this. So we had an opioid epidemic in the United States. We still have one. Everybody that has an opioid problem is in line to have a bad result if they happen to catch this thing. Why that isn't being told to people, I don't know. The other scare thing is they'll find young people and say, oh my God, this young person got this. Unbelievable. It's incredible. It shows that everybody can get it. It could happen to anyone at any time. You could just be sitting there minding your own business, a healthy young person, and get hit by this and die or end up in the hospital. Well, what they fail to tell you when they highlight these cases of young people, in one case they interviewed the person, and if you listen in depth, at one point she says, I wish I hadn't been a smoker. Okay, you're 39 years old, you're smoking 2-3 packs a day, something that comes around that hits the lungs hard, got you hard, has nothing to do with you being, you were, guys, I don't, this is not moralism. If you're a smoker, you ain't healthy. You're by definition unhealthy. So just, I mean, you got to live with it and face that fact. So that was not a healthy person. Another case out of New Orleans, a youngish woman, again in her late 30s, died. No autopsy, no coroner report, but the news media is saying she died of the virus. Nobody knows that. And when you read the story in depth, she was self-medicating with whiskey. That's a healthy person? That's a healthy young person? Whose reaction to being sick is to you know, shoot back whiskey as a cure? I mean, the lack of common sense here is just mind-boggling. Then there's another case of a young woman who got it bad. And, you know, it's like, oh my God, she's young, she's healthy, she's a triathlete. How could this possibly happen? Well, she's a CEO of a startup. And she got sick. She had something. She had a flu. She had a fever. She had a headache. She was weak. But she didn't think much of it, so she just muscled on. Now, we all know that when you're starting up a company, 12, 14, 16-hour workdays are the norm. Well, if you got a mild case of this and you choose to work 12, and she didn't know, but she did have it, and she worked it into a major health catastrophe. And an otherwise healthy person can create a health catastrophe for themselves by not taking care of themselves. So why am I bringing this up? When you hear the cases of the young people are getting it, this nobody is safe, there's no out, there's no escape, it's just simply not true. In Italy, the numbers are 99%. It's all either older people and older unhealthy people or people with significant health problems. That's who is having the worst possible outcome. And just to recap, this is not a community spread disease. This has been established and published by the World Health Organization based on their study in China. Why nobody's reading it, why nobody's telling you about it on the news, I don't know. Well, I do know. I'll get to that in a second. But the only way to get this is to be with somebody that has symptoms. They don't have to be wild symptoms, but just they've got the fever, they've got the cough. Hang out with that person in close quarters, touch everything that they touch, be in a confined space with them, and then you have a chance of getting it. If you're a healthy person, you'll probably have a very mild case. Little weakness, little tiredness, a little fever, and it will pass. If you are a severely unhealthy person, or not even severely, you know, you just have some metabolic problems, you're in danger. So people in that condition need to take super duper precautions right now. That's a fact. Shutting down the whole country. I mean, I live in this little village, and we have about 15 little retail stores. We have a bunch of restaurants. We have some little shops. We have an art gallery. You know, it's really, really nice. And I just walked through town today, And except for one, two, three restaurants that are doing takeout and the, and a little food store, all those businesses are closed. And we're business people, we're small business people. We know that a lot of small business people are in a situation where they, if they lose a couple of weeks or a couple of months of revenue, they're finished. They're over. So we're being told we have to close all of our businesses. We're being told we have to isolate ourselves in our homes. I heard Pierre Trudeau say that he was looking at news photographs of people out in the sunshine walking in the park, and he was horrified. And I saw another story about that in the UK, and the headline was, "Don't these idiots realize we may lose our cherished freedoms?" Well, the picture is people walking in the park. They're not, arm in arm. They're like keeping a normal distance. They're out in the fresh air. They're out in the sunshine. How on earth could that be seen as reckless behavior? And yet that's what's being pushed in the news media. So we have kind of the perfect storm here. The news media makes money by creating panic and hooking you and keeping you watching. And the more upset you get, the more you watch, and the more you watch, the more upset you get, and blah, blah, blah. They're selling ads like crazy. They love it. They do. They love it. Every time we have a war, CNN, oh my God, they just love it because you got to watch, and they'll make money. So that's their motivation. Their motivation is not public service, it's not public education, it's not leadership. If it were leadership, there would be a public service announcement on every channel at least once an hour, showing people the right way to wash their hands with soap, telling people what the actual symptoms are, and giving advice to people with symptoms and families that have people with symptoms what to do. And that would run every hour on the hour. Calmly, normal, matter of fact. Look, we all need reinforcement. I need reinforcement. I got to be reminded of simple things. Is CNN doing that? Is Fox doing that? Is MSNBC doing that? Is PBS doing that? Is any outlet doing that? They're bringing on experts that are projecting the end of the world. So that's our media. Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, has anybody in any of those news outlets picked up the phone and called a Chinese doctor? Or, I mean, these are competent, capable people that have real world experience, multiple months now of real world experience dealing with these things. Not a single one of these guys has ever been on a US TV show, as far as I can see. Oh, well, they don't speak English. No, they do. Plenty of them do. But we're not, the media is not asking. So the media is leading the politicians. They get their information from TV, and then they get their information from each other, and they're all trying to outdo each other in taking precautions. Let's shut this down. Let's shut that down. Just shut it down. Shut it. That's how we're going to stop the spread of the virus. Well, if one of these people actually read the WHO report based on the Chinese experience, we are not doing the things that shut the virus down. All we are doing is shutting businesses down and destroying people's livelihoods and destroying people's businesses. So that's our government. They're outdoing each other in incompetent reaction. Then we have, I've talked about the U.S. medical industrial complex. They only just got the donut out of their mouth, at least John Hopkins, last week, to figure out, gee, maybe the Chinese folks know something. And they learned a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, this article is horrifying. I mean, the fundamental basic ABC things that they only just learned last week. And the Chinese, and here's how this meeting ended. With the, I mean, this, I could almost cry. With the Chinese doctors praying for the doctors at John Hopkins because they can see the writing on the wall. None of these hospitals are ready. If the one of the leading medical schools in the world supposedly only just got off the couch to figure out what they need to do last week, late March. What about all the other hospitals? What are they going to do? So, and the Chinese were like, we'll help you any way we can. We'll tell you everything we know. So this is an unusually long Ask Ken. I don't usually, you know, get into these kinds of subjects, though I do talk about health quite a bit on the Ask Ken weekly call because it is an issue for entrepreneurs. We got to take care of our own health. So we're on our own. We can't really count on the authorities to give us useful or accurate information. Luckily, we're entrepreneurs and we have a mindset that tells us we have to do our own research, we have to do our own homework. If something is important, we better understand personally how it works. So if you're on solid ground, look around. There are certainly local ways to help. If you're not on solid ground, discipline is the key right now, self-discipline. I mean, I tell this to everybody and my young relatives, and it's like your best friend in life who's going to be there for you when the shit hits the fan is self-discipline. And I've given some tips on things that you can do to sort of regulate your day to help yourself. And I have to give this comparison again. When New Orleans got flooded, everybody lost their homes, everything in their homes. There was no power. There was no cell phone service. All the stores were closed, not because of government decree, but because there was 3 to 15, in some cases, feet of water sitting in the store. And New Orleans came back. We certainly will come back from this. And I hope when we come back, we remember these lessons. I wish everybody well. I wish I could talk individually with everybody, anybody that is having a problem, but it's not logistically feasible. So that's why I recorded this, and we're certainly going to get through this. But we're going to have to use our God-given intelligence and common sense to do it, and we better be careful and cautious about the things that were being told by a hysterical news media and a clueless political structure, both sides of the aisle. And that's Ask Ken, a feature of the System Club, normally for System Club members only, but this week we opened it up to everyone. Good luck, everybody.